Chapter 13. The Search for Maisa. Perhaps Ruth went to tell my mother that Maisa was lost, Kebron suggested, when Jethro had gone so far in his story. That could hardly have been, Jethro replied, for your mother returned early this morning to the house with many relatives. Had Ruth gone to her, she would either have returned with her, or Lyptus would have heard where she was. Since I came out from the house, I have been wandering about, trying to think what is to be done, and hoping that something might occur to me which would put me upon the track of the villains who carried Maisa off. You do not think of carrying out our plans for tomorrow, Jethro? Kebron asked anxiously. Certainly not. We must stay here until Maisa is found. Your father spoke to me of her, as well as of you. But as he did not see any way in which we could aid her, he said that she must take her chance under the guardianship of your mother, hoping to obtain some day a husband whom she could love. But the present misfortune entirely alters the case. She has need of our active help, and whatever are the risks, we must postpone our start. Amuba said, I do not think we have far to look for the contrivers of the outrage. We know that Ameres refused the request of Tylus for Maisa as a wife for his son. After that came the plot which we overheard in the temple for the murder of someone, and then came the stirring up of the people. Then came the attack upon the house, in which, while the main body of the mob attacked Ameres, a chosen band carried off Maisa. This villain, Tylus, has several motives to spur him on. In the first place, there was anger at the rejection of his son's suit. Second, that he would, at the death of Ameres, naturally succeed to the high priesthood. Third, he may have thought that if he could obtain possession of Maisa and marry her to his son, she would bring with her no small portion of her father's lands as a dowry. He has only to keep Maisa immured until his power as high priest is consolidated, and then if he gains the consent of the king to the marriage, Maisa could not refuse to accept the fate prepared for her. "It must not be, Jethro," Kebron cried excitedly, pacing up and down the chamber. "Maisa cannot bear Plexo. He is crafty and cruel."
"I think I can promise you, Kebron, that marriage will never come about. We may not find Maisa, but I can find Plexo, as well as his father, whom I regard as the murderer of Ameres."
As he finished speaking, Kigron entered. He was told of the abduction of Maisa and the determination to remain and search for her place of concealment. He shook his head.
It is a rash resolution, haunted as you yourselves are. As to your remaining here much longer, I think it would be madness. The cave would scarcely escape discovery a second time. Therefore, I think it impossible for you to stay here more than another day or two. But there are many caves and burial places higher up on the hillside where you might be concealed.
I think that is a very good plan, said Jethro. I should think it best to remove to one of these caves at once. There is never any saying when the searchers may be here again. Therefore, if you will, Kigron, I will at daybreak go with you and choose a cave and make our arrangements.
And the embalmer agreed. It was a long time, however, before the three occupants of the chamber threw themselves upon their piles of rushes. They talked of Maisa and discussed possible plans for discovering where she was concealed. And they wondered what had become of Ruth.
I cannot help thinking myself, Kebron said, that she has followed Maisa. If I could be sure Ruth was with Maisa, I should feel less anxious, for I am certain she would be a comfort and support to her.
She would indeed, Jethro agreed. Moreover, I should have greater hopes of finding where they are concealed, for if it were possible to get away and to spread the alarm, I am sure that Ruth would seize the first opportunity promptly.
The next morning Kigron led them along the foot of the hill for some distance, and then turning began to ascend at a spot where it sloped gradually. They passed many tombs, partly erected with masonry and partly cut out from the rock behind, and it was not until after walking fully half an hour that he stopped before the entrance of one of them.
This is the one that I thought of as being suitable for the purpose. The owners apparently changing their minds and having a larger tomb made lower down the hill. Also, I know that the stone door which rolls across the entrance has not been cemented in its place. Therefore, there will be no difficulty in effecting an entry.
The stone across the entrance to the tomb was pushed back without difficulty, and they entered and followed this plan. Kigron said,
"Here you will be perfectly safe. You can keep the stone rolled back, unless you see searchers approaching. As soon as it is dark, you can, of course, issue out and pass the night wherever you may think fit. If you will come down as soon as it is dark, I will give you provisions for some days, together with peasants' clothing I have prepared for you, and, of course, the money Amerius committed to my charge. It is not likely anything will occur to force you to make a move suddenly, but it is best that you should have everything in readiness should the occasion arise. I will come up myself tomorrow night, an hour after sunset. Now I leave you to the protection of the gods."
As soon as the embalmer left them, the three friends sat down, just within the entrance to the tomb, looking out over the quiet city lying in the plain below them.
"I wish we had our peasant clothing," Kebron said, "so that we might go down with you, Jethro, and join in the search for Mysa."
"It would be too dangerous. Any search you make must be at night. I shall station myself near the house of Tylus, and follow as closely as I can without attracting attention all the slaves or servants who may come out. I may then catch a few words of their talk and possibly gather some clue to the mystery."
"I wish, Jethro, that you would again go to our house and see old Lyptis and get her to bring out to you a suit of my priest's garments. With these I could at night enter the temple and wander unquestioned through the chambers and courts. The nights are dark now, and unless I pass close to a lamp, no one would recognize me. We overheard one conversation of importance there. It may be I could overhear another."
Amuba said, "I believe myself a better plan than yours would be for us to establish watch over Plexo. Tylus may have his duties, and is no doubt fully occupied securing his election to the high priesthood. But Plexo would probably go sometimes to see Mysa in her place of imprisonment. He will naturally be anxious to conciliate, or frighten her, into giving her consent to marry him as soon as possible. If we can watch him closely enough, he is sure to lead us at last to her." "That will certainly be the best way, Amuba," agreed Jethro. "I did not think of it before, but it is clearly the plan that promises the best chance of success. But we'll need disguises. I will think the matter over today, and when I see Kigron this evening, I'll beg him to get the disguises that seem to him best for us to use."
"As for me, Jethro," Kebron said, "I will visit the temple of an evening. But long before midnight all will be quiet there, so that will give me plenty of time for sleep, and in the daytime I will work with you. Get me the garb of a peasant woman. In such a dress, and with a female head covering, I could surely get myself up so that even those who know me would pass by without suspicion. Many women are taller than I.
And now I'm going down to the city. I feel more hopeful than I did," Jethro replied. "And for the first time I begin to think we have a chance of discovering where the villains have carried Mysa." For Kebron and Amuba, the day passed slowly. They would not show themselves outside the tomb, as Kigron had earnestly begged them not to do so. Still, they had much to talk of. The chances of finding Mysa, the question with whom she should be placed if recovered, the prospects of the long and adventurous journey which lay before them. Amuba encouraged talk on all these points, and started the conversation afresh whenever it dropped, for he saw that the excitement concerning Mysa had done a great deal for Kebron. It had weaned his friend's thoughts from the death of Amerius, and the consequences that had arisen from his unfortunate bow shot. It had given him fresh subject for thought, and revived his spirits and interest in life. Both young men were glad when, late in the afternoon, they saw Jethro ascending the hill. As he came up to them, he said, "I have no news. I've overheard many scraps of conversation, and one and all talked upon the same subjects. The death of Amerius and the sacred cat, and the want of success in searching for you. Now, if a clue is to be obtained, it will be in the temple, or by following Plexo." As soon as it was dark, they descended the hill together. Kebron had attired himself in the garments bearing the distinguishing marks of the priesthood, which Jethro had brought up with him, having obtained them from old Lyptis. When near the house of the embalmer, the lads stopped, And Jethro went on and returned with the various disguises he had asked Kigron to obtain for them. These, with the exception of the attire of two peasants, he hid for the present in some bushes near the path. Then he rubbed Amuba's skin and his own with a fluid he had obtained from Kigron, and after putting on the peasant's clothes, they took their way toward the house of Tylus. While Kebron went towards the temple, which was only a short distance from the house, Jethro and Amuba sat down by the wall close to the gate. But beyond servants and visitors, no one came out. At 10 o'clock they heard the bolts of the gates fastened, but remained where they were until nearly midnight, when Kebron joined them. He had spent the time wandering from court to court of the temple, but he had seen no one. Amuba and Kebron were both inclined to be dispirited at the want of success of their watching, but Jethro chided them for their impatience. "You do not suppose that you are going to find out a secret so well hidden by a few hours' watching. Tomorrow we will begin our watch 2 or 3 hours before sundown. As I am better known to the servants at the house of Tylus than you are, I will content myself with watching the northern road from the city, while you, dressed as peasants, can watch the house itself. Kebron, you might sit down by the wall 50 yards from the house on the north side, while you, Amuba, had best keep on the other side of the road, and somewhat to the south of the gate. In this way you'll be within sight of each other, and yet not together. Solitary figures are less likely to attract attention than two together." Accordingly, the next day, 3 hours after noon, Amuba and Kebron, disguised as peasants, went down to the house of Tylus and took their posts as arranged. Late in the afternoon, Amuba noticed that one of the slaves from the house of Tylus suddenly checked his walk as he passed Kebron and gazed fixedly at him. Amuba left the spot where he was standing and walked quickly in that direction. The slave spoke to Kebron, who rose to his feet. A moment later, the slave seized him. As they were struggling, Amuba ran up.
"This is the slayer of the sacred cat," the slave exclaimed. "Aid me to drag him into the house of my master."
But to his surprise, Amuba sprang upon him and struck him such a heavy blow in the face, he released his hold of Kebron and staggered backwards.
"Run for your life," Amuba exclaimed to his friend. The slave, recovering from the blow, rushed at Amuba, shouting at the top of his voice,
"Death to the slayers of the sacred cat!"
But springing back to avoid the grasp of his assailant, Amuba struck him with all his strength in the face, and as he reeled backwards repeated the blow, and the man fell heavily to the ground. But several other people, attracted by the conflict and the shouts of the slave, were running up, and Amuba took to his heels. As he expected, the passers-by paused to assist the fallen man and learn the cause of the fray before they took up the pursuit, and he was nearly 200 yards away when he heard the cry again raised, "Death to the slayer of the sacred cat!" By this time he was alongside Kebron, who had paused to see the issue of the contest with the slave.
"Turn off, Kebron. Take a turning or two, and then make your way up to the hill. I will keep straight on for a while. I cannot run these fellows."
Amuba slackened his speed now, judging correctly that his pursuers, if they saw they gained on him, would not trouble themselves about his companion, of whose identity they were probably still ignorant. When, on looking back, he saw that all had passed the turning, he again quickened his speed. He was not really afraid of being overtaken by his pursuers, but that he might meet other people who, seeing the pursuit, would take him for a fugitive from justice and endeavor to stop him. As soon as he felt sure that Kebron was quite safe from pursuit, Amuba turned off from the road he was following and struck across the country. A quarter of an hour's running took him fairly beyond the villas and detached houses scattered thickly round Thebes. The ground here was closely cultivated. It was intersected everywhere by channels conveying the water needed for the irrigation of the crops. The holdings were small, and in the center of each stood a little hut. He ran until he arrived at a hut whose door stood open. A glance within showed that it was not at present used by the owner. So Amuba entered and closed the door behind him, and then climbed up a ladder and threw himself down on some boards that lay on the rafters for the storage of fruit, pulling the ladder up after him. The last glimpse he had had of his pursuers showed that they were fully 400 yards behind him, but he was sure that many of the cultivators whom he had passed in his flight, and who had contented themselves with shouting threats at him for crossing their land, would, on learning from his pursuers the crime with which he was charged, join the pursuit. Thus fresh runners would constantly be taking up the chase, and he would eventually be run down. Therefore he thought it best to attempt to conceal himself until night fell. But scarcely had he thrown himself down when he heard loud shouts rise close at hand, and had no doubt that someone, unobserved by him, had noticed him enter the hut. He sprang down again from the loft, and seizing a stake which was standing in a corner, he again sallied out. As he did so, he was suddenly grasped. Twisting himself free, he saw a powerful Nubian, armed with a hoe. Without a moment's hesitation, Amuba sprang at him with his stake. The Nubian parried the blow with his hoe, and in turn dealt a sweeping blow at the lad. Amuba sprang back just in time, and before the man could recover his guard, struck him a heavy blow on the wrist with his stake. His opponent dropped his hoe, uttering a cry of pain and rage. Amuba followed up the blow on the wrist with one on the ankle, and as the man fell, bounded away again. But the man's shouts had been heard, and the pursuers were now only 50 yards away. Amuba saw their numbers had swollen considerably, and a doubt as to his ability to escape them for the first time entered his mind. They were now too close for any further attempts at concealment, and he had now only his speed to rely on. But he had already run nearly 3 miles, while many of those behind him were fresh, and he soon found he could not again widen the space between them. They were but a few paces behind him when he found himself again on the high road. A few 100 yards away, he saw a chariot approaching, and feeling that further flight was hopeless, he turned, stake in hand, to face his pursuers, who were only a few paces behind him. With cries of, "Kill him! Death to the insulter of the gods!" they rushed at him. Panting and breathless, he defended himself as best he could, but his guard was beaten down and blows were showered upon him. He fell, but with a great effort struggled to his feet again. His senses were fast deserting him now, but he was conscious that the chariot drew up beside him, scattering his assailants right and left. He heard a voice raised in tones of indignant reproach, and a renewal of the cries of hatred. He felt strong arms round him. And then Amuba was lifted, and for a time became unconscious.